Welcome to Unhinged and Bumbled Up, where you can
join serial dater Phil.
That's me. And dating detoxer Liz.
That's me. Welcome to the world of online dating.
What can you expect in the Unhinged and Bumbled Up podcast?
Dating do's, don'ts and disasters.
What we and our guests would gladly chuck in the 2020 dating bin to be gone forever.
What real people really think about those tricky dating dilemmas.
Awesome dating trivia. You'll never know when it'll come in handy for that pub quiz.
Top tips and tricks from our awesome guest experts, who luckily know a little more about dating than we do.
So if you've ever had a dating disaster,
ignored the red flags.
If your dating life is less successful than the chances of Liz missing an episode of Love Island,
then you're in the right place. Do we know what we're talking about? No! Our dating lives are both utter shite. So join us as we talk all things dating. The good, the bad, and the... Sorry, there's just no spark.
Hello, and welcome to Unhinged and Bumbled Up. I'm Phil, she's Liz, and today we're joined by Clementine Lalande, the founder of Once. Once upon a time, there was Katie, who received a nice compliment, copy and pasted to 540 other girls. On today's episode, we'll delve into the world of Once dating app, find out how they are changing the Once Upon a Time stories, how being a rock star can mean something totally different to being a film star. Like, what do these mean? We'll find out. Once is also the first all-women team created algorithm. They have 5 million chats per day and 50 million matches every month. But first, let's find out more about Clementine.
Yay. Hi. Super happy to be with you. Thanks for having me. I'm an engineer by training, kind of a nerd person. Absolutely never intended to, you know, just be active in a dating space, but just happened to be this way. Because I was an investor and started in startups. And so a friend of mine contacted me. He said, hey, do you want to run a dating app with me? So I was like, sure, it sounds exciting. So I was 6 years ago. And doing this, I started installing, you know, I mean, as a regular, you know, business person, just 50 dating apps to see what the landscape was. And I was horrified. Like, just my kind of, my takeaway was like, oh my God. And especially for women. Right. I felt the experience was terrible. I felt this was this really interesting thing where everyone around me, I was single, was using dating apps and everyone was saying it's terrible. Right. Like this kind of, you know, and on the other hand, technology helps us to do amazing things in our lives. So we like, why could technology also not help us, you know, also find love or be moved or, you know, emotions, whatever you're looking for. Yeah, so that's how I started getting engaged in this space. And so, yeah, Once is a, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that, but it's the dating apps are created are really seen as really the post-swipe apps.
Yeah.
So really, you know, my kind of goal in life is just that we don't swipe anymore. That's kind of my daily objective, yes. I would say.
End swiping forever.
Yeah, we're on board.
Exactly.
So with Once, Charlie Lester, who was a previous guest on our show, actually shared the personality test, the emotional personality test. And I put it out to quite a few of our followers, asked them to take it. And both Liz and I have taken it. And today, actually, I joined the Once app. So I'll talk more about that later. Do you want to tell us what Once is all about first, and then we'll delve more into what we got?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Once, very simple. It's Once because it's one match a day. Mm-hmm. So, and we see one match a day as our solution to, or proposition at least, to not swipe anymore. That's the whole story behind this is that we believe, no, I'm not sure we all realize how volume can be toxic for all of us. What I mean by volume is just having all those millions, gazillions of profiles available around us. an unlimited way, quasi, and only limit being your patience or your time or your health, really.
Sanity.
Mm-hmm. Sanity. So many people lost it already, right? Like, I just don't realize. And I feel also it creates some kind of like latent anxiety that sometimes it's difficult to express or to really realize, but creates a number of problems, including what I call FOBO, so you know, fear of best option. So what if the next one was better? The Netflix effect, which is like, can't stop swiping anymore. So basically, like, you know, the minute I'm just upset with something, I'm just going to the next person. Just the ability to speak with 27 people at the same time, which is like an incredible mind fragmentation with this incredibly crappy average level of conversations, right? Yeah. And not talking about, you know, the kind of frustration, you know, both for men and women, which leads to, on average, over aggressivity, over sexualization of context. So anyways, like, I think when I have nothing to do in my life, I will write a book about that, because right now I just try to put this time into doing dating apps, but I feel like this is really, like, we don't realize how toxic this is. Or we're just starting now. You know, it's been maybe 2-3 years. People are start to be really loud about this. And I love how you guys do this, by the way. I mean, like, you know, a lot of what you talk about is related to this in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we thought, okay, the game is, with once the logic is, every time we see something really broken in a dating industry, let's try to do the exact opposite, okay? Yeah. Just something completely orthogonal. Can you say that?
That's amazing.
Like perpendicular, yeah.
Yeah,
perpendicular, exactly. So a million profile availables, no limit to endless swiping. Perfect. Let's do just one match a day, right? That's we try to do that. And there's a number of things like that where we try to take the exact opposite. So I'm going to talk about the love experiment, which you were mentioning before. Yep. That's another attempt to just do exactly the opposite of what the market does.
Because I think what you're saying about the anxiety, in a way, I used to get that. I swiped, I looked at a profile and was like, oh, she's amazing, she's great, she's awesome. Swiped, and then it was kind of like, when's she going to match? When's she going to match? Is she going to match? Is she not going to match? And that, it's everything all built into one that just, it takes up so much mind space being on dating apps where you're swiping.
And it's also the same psychology as is used to make apps like Instagram really addictive, right? So they've proven that basically scrolling activates dopamine, and it encourages you to continue scrolling, and you kind of don't know what you're looking for or what you're waiting. Like, there's no end point to the scrolling, but you kind of feel like you can't stop because the next scroll might be the thing. And I really love that FOBO, the fear of better options. Like, you just keep endlessly browsing because you're too afraid to make a decision in case this is the wrong decision, right? And exactly. And exactly the same as when you're trying to find something to watch on Netflix. I actually recently went away for the weekend with my best friend, and we were staying in a mobile home in Skegness. It was brilliant. And they, you don't know where Skegness is, sorry. It's like really...
It looks brilliant.
It's like a funny little seaside town. I don't want to be rude about it.
No, but going out those days just outside of your own city is already exactly. Amazing. So,
so we went and stayed this little mobile home, this little seaside town. And they've got a telly in the mobile home, but there's no, you know, it's just terrestrial telly. You've got like 3, maybe 4 channels to choose from, I think. And for some reason, we didn't have any trouble finding something to watch. Whereas somehow at home, when you've got all the channels and you've got Netflix and you've got Amazon Prime and you've got everything else, Now TV, you can't find anything you want to watch. So I'm like, how, when I have 4 channels, can I find more things I want to watch than when I've got 100 channels? And it is just like the paralysis of having too many options, right?
The FOBO. Yeah.
Okay,
and then the next anxiety that comes is FOMO, right? So... and I see that a lot with women. So when I talk to female users of any dating app, what they tell me is, right, because FOBO is for men, right? Like, basically what their experience is swiping to death, right? Like, just your right thumb becomes enormous, right? Just because you swipe so much, like 4 hours a week, something like that. And then for women, the experience is like you get spammed, right? That's your experience. I did some tests, you know, with various pictures. Like sometimes it was just pictures, but it's just white, like nothing at all, just a white square. You still get likes, right? Like it's just amazing. And you get, you know, this is how the algorithm works, right? It's so few women that are brave enough to just continue being on the app. And statistically, there's, roughly 20% women, right? Like on every 18. So that gets technically, statistically, so many more messages and it gets spammed. So the experience for women is like, okay, I have those 27 matches, 82 matches, 327 matches. I had one German journalist who was like, I have 836 matches. Wow. How am I going to do? And she was like, am I going to book my Saturday afternoon to just browse through my matches? Because then the FOMO comes in, right? Which is, what if the right one was in this list?
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, this is creating anxiety, right?
What if the man of my dreams is hiding in this endless list of matches? How am I going to locate them?
I need to look at all of them. Like, you know, what if I miss it?
Mm-hmm. And like you say, you book time out and the time that you could be doing something, you are spending on those apps going through because the thing is, you don't want to leave it too long because they may become interested in someone else and they may just go, see you later. And it's
and that's one of the reasons I started the Date for a Year is because I just realized that my life was being taken over by dating apps to the extent that I was like not using my free time for anything more than swiping and trying to eke out mindless conversations with dull men.
Facts about dating.
This segment is called Facts About Dating, where we increase our knowledge slightly and learn a little fun fact about dating. We also ask the guests to find a fun fact.
Okay, so facts about dating. What amazing dating trivia have you got for us today, Phil?
Me? Well, 4 in 10 workplace relationships end up in marriage, apparently. So simple as that.
Simple as that. Phil's laughing because we have... because he knows that it's a little bit close to home, and so this particular fact about dating is like said with a like lol, dig me in the ribs while saying it. So I wasn't actually thinking of that when
I found the fact. Yeah, you just brought that up.
Yeah, okay, so totally chucked myself in that one. Clementine, moving quickly on, what's your fact?
Oh, I have a business fact, okay? Because I'm all in kind of like the gossip part of the dating scene, which is a very small scene, right? Because you know that basically the biggest company, which is IAC, they own 150 dating brands, right? So like, there's virtually just 5 companies in the world that all runs the entire dating. So one fact about dating is that. While Whitney Wolf says that she created Bumble, she hasn't.
Oh, controversial.
Controversial. And beautiful PR story, like, good job. Like, guys, this is amazing. But basically, it's Andrea Andreff, the founder of Badoo, who basically reached out to her and offered her some kind of a deal. So, like, hey, take many percentage of the company and you're going to be the face and you're going to say you created it with this excellent story of revenge on her ex and Tinder.
Wow.
And this is the best PR story in the world.
Isn't it? Because it's done bloody well. It's done around.
Very well. Very well with the revenge story. Very, like, wow.
I mean, I kind of feel on some level like it's quite a nice yay feminism story. So I'm just slightly disappointed it's not real, but you know,
and Liz, can you top that one?
Right. Okay. I'm going to give my dating fact and then I'm just going to put in place a caveat, right? Okay. So this is adorable. Humans aren't the only species in the animal kingdom that practice monogamous relationships. Out in the wild, beavers, otters, wolves, seahorses, and barn owls are just some of the 25 adorable animals that mate for life. Now, wait. Go on, Phil's doing a math thing. You're doing a mad finger dance.
I'll wait till you caveat, and then I will explain more if this caveat doesn't cover it.
Well, as you could probably tell from the tone in which I read that snippet, it's taken from an article which is very pro-relationships, pro-monogamy, pro-marriage. That entire article is full of facts about how married people get less sick and heal faster from illness and various other things, which I'm almost certain are absolute shit. So I shared this fact because it's about animals and I love animals and it's adorable, but I'm going to fully caveat it with the fact that I think it might be nonsense.
So I've always wanted an animal fact, so I can bring this up. So everybody said swans are monogamous. So this is what everyone sees
everybody
as swans.
Everybody said that, did they?
Well, a lot of people have said swans are monogamous. Yeah, yeah. So everyone's like, swans mate for life.
Right.
They are socially monogamous. They're not sexually monogamous. So there's two types. So they will stay together forever, but the cygnets might not necessarily be the swan that's with them. This
How
happens a lot, and we will go into like further detail about animal monogamy.
So you have like a companion, but you can chag about.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, what's not to like?
You'll see a swan with someone else, and it happened. Like social and sexual monogamy in the animal kingdom is very, very rare, like extremely rare, like having both of them. It'll either be one or the other. But
makes me think of Friends with the you see the lobsters holding the claws. But maybe they're off doing the naughty with another lobster.
Maybe,
at the weekend.
maybe. So there's our facts.
Don't say you didn't learn anything today.
You learnt a lot.
Back to the questions.
Can you answer this?
Now we're back to the real reason why you're all here, asking our guests the questions and getting the answers. Because you're nearly 5 months into the date for a year, so
I am.
Keep reminding her.
Yeah. It'll give me a countdown of how many days are left.
You know what? There's exactly what you to come back to what you said earlier, Liz. What we also need to be aware of is it's not just us, you know, men and women, whatever we're looking for, that are driving this this high volume. It's also because it's an addiction design, right? Mm-hmm. Those apps are done this way for two reasons. One, you mentioned, Liz, which is the endless scrolling. That's just generates something very powerful in our brain. Who knows it's unlimited. So that's something that's very high in terms of addiction, discovering what's next. The second thing that is very, very intense in terms of dopamine creation is the randomness of the like. So you can't know for sure who's going to like you, right? And this uncertainty is exactly how loot boxes are generated, for example, right? So there's this gambling, set up. You know, there's the thing in the casinos. I don't know the word in English.
Casinos, the
one-armed bandits. They're right. Your fruit machines. So you go and it's that, I'll put one more coin in because it might win.
Because
next
you don't
time.
Know.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, because it's random. So
and you think, and you also think that there might be a pattern, because there's definitely that psychology, isn't there? You're like, well, it hasn't been red the last five throws, so surely it must be red this time. And you're I've swiped through all the morons. Surely Prince Charming is just on the next swipe, right?
See,
but that's not how it works, apparently.
I've done this with, been on Bumble, and I've kind of, in my head thought, is this going to be a match? Because I tried to work out that, oh, it'll show you someone that could be a potential match first, and then it'll skip two, and then it'll show you another two that are matches. And I was trying to work it out, and I was no, can't work it out. It just randomizes it each time.
Yeah. And the randomness is very addictive because you don't know. So it's a random reward. So basically what we wanted to do is to just move away from that. And I think it's super important for women, but also for men. Really, virtually everyone is losing their sanity right on those apps. Yeah. So one match a day at noon. What the basic concept at the beginning was to say, well, let's recreate this space that we lost, right? This mental space or just time, just acknowledging that just for something to happen, and something that is not just very reproductive, basic behavior, which is kind of, oh, I want him, I want her, you know, based on pictures only, something that is a little bit more intimate and interesting, maybe, without judging too much, it requires time. Because you need time to just, you know, be focused on someone, have this mental availability to try to imagine what he or what she is like, combining the information you have and then see whether or not you become curious. For this whole process to happen, you need time. So that's really the idea of the, so we call this slow dating, but virtually what we became is post swipe, because we try to, we went further than trying to deconstruct other dating issues.
I love that. I really love that the concept of slow dating. I think is so powerful in the world that we live in, which is so vast, immediate, volume, quantity, overstimulated, like noisy, you know, metaphorically. And I think that's a really nice way of like creating a lot more simplicity, like streamlining the whole thing, right? I'm gonna ask you a question. It might be a question actually for a psychologist, in fact, but I'm just interested in your take on it. So when we use dating apps which are built on randomness and unpredictability, I just have this curiosity about, does that then create an attraction towards unpredictability in subsequent relationships? Does that make sense? Like, does the random and unpredictable nature of dating make us actually averse to something which is more slow and consistent and a slow burner? Do you know what I mean? Like, do we get hooked on this, like, whoa, I don't know what's going to happen? It's like living on the edge feeling.
I think what is really transferred to our I would say analog life is this decision pace making. That's it. You see what I mean? I put the words in the wrong order, probably.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like
the pace of decision making.
There we go. Thank you. I was like, which order should I put it? So, you know, this is this kind of thing when you're like, you know, tack, you know, like when, you know, when the analog life comes and then, you know, maybe you have to kind of, I don't know, just be in a train for 2 hours next to someone. It's like, wow, this is really long. I feel this, but it's not just dating, right? The entire acceleration of how fast and how quickly we consume information, how many notifications we get, how quickly you can solve a problem, like tack, okay, notification push, black. I think creates this zapping effect in your brain where you really get, you need to be fed very quickly with a high volume of information. So some people tell us, well, once it's too slow, you know, kind of just, I cannot just, you know, handle just one match a day. It's just, I need tack, you know, like more.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, cool. Like just, you know, snap is not for you. Fine.
Yeah.
You know, just go when you come back when you Tinder burn out in 2 years, you'll come back and join us again. That's okay. Like many people do that. That story. I think it's I'm really happy that I see those movements. A lot of really interesting books about, you know, understanding addiction. You know, to high pace content, high pace notification, social networks. And also talking about dating, that is making us aware, because at the end the app doesn't work itself, right? It's you behind it. So so creating mechanisms for you, increasing your self-awareness of how you feel, how much time you spend, trying to be more in control of how you want to use those apps and those tools, because they're just tools, right?
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, I think we're making a lot of progress. We still have a lot of progress to do, but
I think it's really interesting. There's a great book by, I think it's Cal Newport, called Digital Minimalism, that I really love, which is essentially about exactly that, like high volume, high consumption, overstimulation culture from our devices. And there's actually like almost like a detox process that he talks about in the book, where you like, you know, completely get rid of your phone more or less for a couple of weeks and then gradually introduce it. It reminds me of the, if you've ever heard the FODMAP diet, where you basically eliminate all food groups and introduce them one at a time so you can figure out what it is that you're not tolerating. It's kind of that approach to devices where you're like, okay, well, we're just going to have to go completely cold turkey and then introduce one thing at a time. But I think quite often there are like quite binary ways of looking at things, right? You can go, okay, well, if we believe in technological approaches to dating, then it has to be, you know, Tinder. And if we, or we believe in analog approaches to meeting people, like in the fucking supermarket or at the gym, like two ends of the spectrum, right? You've got entirely tech or entirely organic. But what I really like about Once is that actually is kind of like a way of pairing back the tech and go, well, tech itself is not the problem, but the way that we're using the tech is a problem. So is there another way to use the tech that is more compatible with sanity?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always say it's unbelievable how advanced the tech is in some domains and how stupid the tech is in dating. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so it's technology is not the problem. The problem is just we have crap technology, right? That's just the problem. And there's so much more to invent. So I tell you, in the next 5 years, it's going to be amazing stuff coming out on dating, for sure. And that's not going to be Tinder. It's not going to be Bumble, I tell you, because they're too interested in just maximizing swipes and users and time spent, you know?
They and nobody engage, wants to put their energy into that anymore. It takes up too much time and everyone's like, no. Yeah.
The 2020 bin.
This segment is called the 2020 bin, basically the Modern Room 101. Each week we'll be asking our guest to chuck something they hate about dating in the 2020 bin and give us a reason why.
So it is time for the 2020 bin. Clementine, have you got your item that you want to chuck in the bin and explain the reasons why?
Yes, I have one really strong suggestion, I think, which is I suggest that we get rid and put to the bin any question that is related to physical form or muscularity or overweight or or anything that is even remotely related to this in the sign up. So in most apps, it's one of the first 10 questions, and I think it's 2021 and it's time for, you know,
yeah, what positivity do we still need to ask people if they're athletic or muscular or curvy, quote unquote.
Or even worse, what is their preference for their match, right? Because
I never know how to answer that. I'm like, I've got a little bit of a dad bod, and I'm
dad
like,
bod
do,
is
I,
category.
do I come under like average? I'm not athletic. I'm somewhere like there. So no, we shouldn't ask that. And we shouldn't ask what people's preferences are either. It's like on the apps.
If
you meet somebody amazing, like give a shit if they're, you know,
staying away.
Like, who cares? Yeah, exactly. So I think this is a very quick bin because I think we're all agreed that that is going in the bin. So
yes.
We'll let you push the button. There we go. Awesome.
Back to the questions.
Where am I? Who are you people?
This is the final instalment of guest questions, so sit back, relax, and find out what else we've got to ask.
So on to, because you there at Once have the first all-women team to create an algorithm, haven't you? And that is really impressive because
girl power.
I feel that women on dating apps, they are the ones that tend to get all the abuse. They tend to get all the unsolicited photos and stuff like that. So why shouldn't it be the women that have created the algorithm? Because they know kind of what works, what goes together, because they've dealt with those bad experiences. So, That's amazing.
By the way, that's talking about unsolicited pictures. That's another feature that we developed to try to be loud about what sucks in dating. We developed an algorithm that detects dick pics and
animals,
and we replace them by kittens.
I love that idea.
That's brilliant.
That amazing.
Because reason number one is like nobody gets accepted by kittens, you know?
Nope. So
you can't get
everybody loves kittens. Right?
Everybody loves kittens. And worst case, you'll have a good conversation about why is it inappropriate to share your private parts, you know, especially without asking, which is the case 97% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the last thing. Okay. So back to this. So, and that's like what we do, you know, once a year, roughly once a year, we release one new feature. Is like, you know, fuck Tinder. Like, just, I mean, Tinder decided to do this one. This was not against Tinder because they decided just to ban pictures altogether. It's much easier, right? Treat everyone less like babies. But that's just what was against Bumble, who says, oh, you might don't want to see this picture, which creates, you know, this additional layer of anxiety that we need so much, right? So
kittens are the best approach.
Kittens, I mean, with kittens, you can't get it wrong, right? Our 100% female algorithm. So that's just, by the way, just for the record, I did not wake up one morning saying like, oh, I'm going to do a 100% female design algorithm. That was not the starting point, but we just ended up. So the starting point was, so I've been interviewed quite a bit those last year about algorithms, you know, asking how algorithm works. There's been so much noise, right, 2019 about the Tinder algorithm and how stupidly patriarchal it was, where it kind of like, you know, you've read about this probably, like creating couples with your the men having a higher social status and slightly older than the women, like whatever. It's just all kind of crap. Nice. Just like, and so I was like, yeah, of course. You know, dating is going to be very soon responsible for half of the babies born.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's designed only by men, you know, and it's 2021. Everything is fine. So, I mean, not saying again, like, I'm not the type of person, like, I'm not, you know, don't have anything against men. I love them. Like, it's just, but it's just, it doesn't feel like exactly smart to just cut half of the humanity, you know, of this kind of topics, especially because algorithms are so pernicious in the sense, but like, you know, they're just a very simple suite of decisions, and an algorithm is as smart as the input and the decisions you make. So if one, you have cognitive bias when you build your algorithm because your design team doesn't represent your population, is a problem. Second, if you're not transparent about your algorithm, there's no feedback loop, right? So where is the accountability? Where is where is your responsibility into, you know, in a topic where you're supposed to make people happy, right? So so I've been talking a lot about this, and like, oh, you should, you know, I should make algorithm transparent, etc. So at some point I was like, I was also looking into what is it that define current algorithm. And if you want to simplify really the dating space right now, there's two type of algorithms. One type of algorithm is what I call the reproductive algorithm. So that's Tinder and the like. Okay, so you need to think about this like a gigantic ATP type of worldwide championship, right? It's a hot or not game, right? Gigantic. You know, you're like 5.2, and then a person that is lower than you swipe left, ooh, you're going down. And then, you know, there's someone
like a rating.
So because every set decision is taken, you know, under 0.15 second, it's obviously just based on, you know, physical appearance, just mechanical. And it's based on whether you have this impulsion of like, oh, you know, this is what I call reproductive algorithm, because it's just very, you know, primary. I want to sound like this, like, you know,
primal,
this kind of primal, whatever, primal instinct of kind of, oh, do you want her? You know, just like,
do I want to beat her with a club and drag her back to my cave?
Because effectively, what that means is people that are, let's say, essentially attractive in a sense of like a model sense, they will go a lot higher and get seen by more people because they are getting swiped right more on. Whereas the people that haven't got great photos or the people that like me, would probably
good looking.
Don't
downplay yourself.
Average. Yeah. they would be seen less then, I'm guessing. So because obviously they're swiped left on more, and so is
exactly. I mean, like just basically that's the essence of it. Then obviously they have sophisticated a little bit more because they also take into account how picky you are, how if you are paying user or not, if you are close to churn or not, like all those kind of things that are just meant to optimize, you know, your presence and their you know annual run rate really. So not doesn't have much to do with your personal happiness, right?
No.
Or remotely, unless you're a Tinder shareholder, right? That's a different story. Then the loop is closed, right? Just buy the shares, buy all the shares. And then the problem is going to be solved, right?
Getting on it now.
Bye. You're welcome, my friends. And then that's one type, right? When the reproductive algorithm. Uh-huh. And then there's this other type, which is slightly older, which I call the the pre-marriage information sheet, you know, or the also the patriarchal, but it could be patriarchal in both actually. So like, you will know what I talk about in a second. Is those forms, those dating apps where so typically Match.com, Meetic, like all this kind of eHarmony, blah, blah. Said, and I guess, you know, so how long did you study? What's your position? In Japan, I would ask you your income, right? You know, do you like classical music or rock? Are you cats or dog? How many kids? When, you know, in some German apps, they even ask you, like, what's your preferred, what's your ideal temperature in the room? Are you more kind of a 19-degree person or 20-degree?
I would love that because I am always cold.
Always hot.
Well, see, we would make a terrible couple because I'd be constantly turning the thermostat up and you'd be telling, I need to find somebody who's also always cold so we can have a toasty warm house.
Okay, so maybe we can keep that question for Liz. Okay. So, you know, those algorithms, typically what they take is, so they take as inputs, typically, you know, between 40 and 90 answers, right, to questions. That's how much people can take, right? Like, then after that, then everybody's like, fuck, I don't want to answer the questions anymore. and they try to make sense of it, right? They try to do some science about it. So those algorithms, what they try to do, what I call this pre-marriage information sheet, is really that they're trying to project everything that society is expecting from a couple, right? So married, long time, kids together, money, you know,
things in common,
cooking, going to dinners, friends, wine. They would even ask, like, you know, the drinking and smoking and everything. Okay, well, maybe that makes somehow sense, right? Mm. Building your algorithm on that is a different question, right? Because who says, like, you know, some people looked into this. You can answer all those questions, try to think what your lover should look like, and then you systematically end up with someone who's exactly the opposite, right? Who hasn't experienced this, right? Like, we thought, so after having those kind of, you know, talks about algorithms and responsibility of designers, I thought, what is it that should be in dating algorithms that it's not today? Mm-hmm. And guess what? I was like, well, maybe we should talk about emotions, you know, because isn't that what it's about? Because instead of answering a question whether, you know, maybe I don't want to say this one because I'm going to keep it for later, but okay, sorry. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe it's more instead of, you know, entering my hates, for example, which, okay, may be interesting, but maybe not, because it's 2021, for Christ's sake, you know, maybe I want to talk about who am I as a person and what emotions I feel, right? Who, how do I handle the world around me? And, you know, how do I feel, like, who I am?
It's like personality, isn't it? And your personality isn't built up. Isn't based on your autobiographical data and whether you like cats and cheese. Your personality is like who you are and how you behave and how you make sense of the world around you, right?
So your personality is not your pictures. Nope. And your personality is not your freaking CV, right? None of that. So algorithm type number one or type number two, that's what they are. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, so why don't we try to find out what is the secret recipe of that, basically. So you can call this chemistry or, you know, emotional matching. That's what we've been, you know, going after. So I created a team of psychologists, a brilliant psychoanalyst in France who's called Fabienne Kramer, and a really, really cool psychologist in the UK who's called Daniel Haig. And so I find those women fascinating because obviously they've been, so they have, you know, couples and or singles, you know, regularly every day talking about love in their practice. And so we've been kind of really scratching our heads. Okay, say like, hey, what's the model? What how could we try to crack the recipe, basically? So yeah, that's been kind of, you know, last 6 months, and we did a number of theoretical work, you know, trying to narrow down the criteria that we think makes sense from a pure, you know, intellectual and theoretical point of view. And then we also gathered data from, you know, like a lot of couples, 1,000 couples, to try to test our theory. And then we ended up having this love experiment. So basically what it is, with a love experiment, when you enter the love experiment, which you have on once. So it's one of the features that is basically built in within the app. You start by going through an assessment of your personality. So don't worry, like we keep it super neat and fun, and like it's so. So we don't want to, you know, give you the impression that you're filling a social security form, right? So like the type of questions you answer. For example, the first question is, would you rather be locked down in a room with 100 people forever, or be locked down in a room alone forever? That's the type of one question that we ask. And those, all those questions, they will evaluate you basically in the four axes that we selected. So you go through that, this assessment, and then once you're done, what we tell you is, what is your profile? There's 16 profiles. And then what we tell you immediately after is, who are the top profiles that we think are compatible with you? And then we let you explore with that. That's what we do.
And then you've also got your nemesis on there as well, haven't you? So like who your opposite is, which I find
Yeah, that's why I wanted to call this the love experiment, because it's not, I don't want to be this kind of a judgmental thing. It's like, you know, this is the way, you know, where I tell people exactly where to go. I love that this tool is also a way to experiment, right? Because and also to, and oh, by the way, in the process, you can also learn about yourself or think about yourself, but and also have the freedom to try to experiment what works for you and what doesn't work. So it's this one formula that is this very thin balance of three quarters of similarities and one quarter of opposite of differences, right?
Yeah.
That is our special selection, if you want. We call this a chemical bond. But then, for example, you can also try to meet someone that is exactly like you, you know, same exact profile as you, or someone that is the exact opposite, right? Should be a fun dinner, right? So why not try it out?
That's really interesting, because I was going to ask you more about, you know, if you only have one match a day, like how do you make sure that those are good quality matches, right? But that makes total sense. And can I ask, is it, you said you had there were 16 personality types. Do they map onto, you know, what we traditionally think of the 16 personalities, or are they slightly different?
They're slightly different because, you know, obviously we've been inspired by the MBTI and the 16 personalities, because that's what they do is basically they have this four axes and two up to extreme, and then the combination of this is 16 combination are possible. So we did the same. We just picked different axes for things that are relevant to romantic relationships. Because obviously MBTI can be very much, you know, oriented towards just, you know, interaction and professional life, you know, or teamwork, right? So what are the axes that are relevant for generating you know, a relationship, basically?
Yeah.
So the four axes are one is related to the relationship with yourself. So are you an extrovert or an introvert, right? Like, what is your direction on that axis? The second dimension is factual versus intuitive. So that's about your perception of the world. Do you capture it with facts or with instincts or intuitions? Those two axes are part of the MBTI framework, if you remember. Then the third axis is about your relationship in a couple. So are you rather an independent person or a fusional person? And then you can be anything in between, obviously, but on which of those two axes do you orient to? And the last axis is something that has to do with the body. So are you rather a cerebral person or a carnal person?
Mm-hmm.
This segment is called The People Have Spoken. Well, you've spoken, if you're an Instagram follower, that is. So, every Wednesday, we ask some questions and get your answers, then we discuss.
Okay, so in The People Have Spoken, you guys know that we love a poll and some listener feedback. So what we asked everybody to do was take the Love Experiment test, see what result they got, and give us some feedback about whether they felt it was accurate, whether they felt it was helpful. So, Phil, what did they say?
So the first question we asked was the emotional profile accurate? And do you want to take guesses on the percentages? Because that's what we normally do. Percentage of yes.
Oh, we did.
This was only the short version. This wasn't the proper app version. So
right.
I'll get onto that in a second.
I don't know. I would say 75%.
72. That is
not bad.
That is awesome. And then we asked, do you think you can find someone based on your emotional profile? And 53% said yes, and 47% said no. And then we asked some of the profiles that came up. But what we'll do first is we will speak about Liz's first, and then we can speak about mine.
Okay, so let me just get mine up.
You were the professor.
I was the professor. So I want to read the... Okay, so congrats, your emotional profile is the professor. You're academic in your pursuit of love, which takes time for you to reach. You fall in love over conversations and deep meeting of minds. Freedom to spend time alone is important, but once in love, your partner's in knowing that you really mean it.
Accurate?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is like a really generous way of saying you're hostile as fuck until you decide that actually you really like someone. Which is pretty accurate. You can't really argue with that.
So I did the short test, the smaller test, and I got Rockstar, and I was like, okay, that sounds really good about me. And then somebody said to me, this is, oh, I went on the app and did it today. And they said their test was pretty accurate, but then they went and did the test on the app and they said they got a different result, but it was more accurate. Ooh, I was like, okay, I'm going to try it.
I've only done the short version because you know because me. You're I don't not use dating apps. Apps. some like big alarm will go off if I download a dating app.
Yep, I will. I've got your phone.
It will just descend from the ceiling like Spider-Man.
So I then went onto the app and took the test, and I got the superhero.
Oh, tell us about that one.
The superhero, you are very charming and attract a lot of attention from everyone. You enjoy the company of others and seem to have endless energy. sounding quite right so far. You favour many lovers over one committed relationship.
Oh,
it will be a fun ride to date you, even if it may not be for long. So,
love it. I mean, from what I know of you, that sounds pretty accurate. I tend to refer to you as a Labrador, but you know,
I'm an exciting little puppy, aren't I? Yeah. So my most compatible profiles were the magician and the detective, which was quite cool. And then my explosive reaction was the rock star. So what I was originally on the shorter test is actually the opposite, like my opposite, which I was like, wow. Yeah. So it was amazing. And like I say, to anyone that took the test, the shorter test, and didn't think it was accurate for yourself, if you're dating and go on and are on apps, download once and do it and see if the one on there, which is it's quite a few more questions, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that should give you a more accurate representation of yourself.
And Clementine, can you kind of summarize for us, like, what are the main features of the different profiles? Because obviously, when we say the name, they don't necessarily, you know, give people a good idea about what they are. Like, what are the main markers? You've talked about the kind of axes, but I'd really love to understand kind of how they're named and how that works.
You mean like how we pick the names, or what? So what we I mean, we had like really long debates of a dinner with the team of what those profiles should look like. What is really important is that, so basically, those profiles represent a certain combination on where, how you position on the axis, right? Mm-hmm. So on the four axes. And then we try to build archetype of what it means, what it could mean in real life. So that's what we build with psychologists, to try to define what kind of behavior you would have when you meet someone new, when you are faced with taking decisions that are involving romantic aspects, how you are, you know, about sex, for example, how you are about intimacy, how you are about commitment. So we're trying to kind of project this into typical situation of the love life. And this is how we started writing those short paragraphs to try to summarize those things. There's a lot of projection, you know, of what we, those particular profiles would give. And then, you know, we gave titles that, you know, we didn't want anyone to be upset about, right? Like, all, you know, those titles are just meant to be. It's really interesting because we're really clear about the axes, and we're sure they're very good at predicting, you know, how people will interact in a romantic relationship. What's really important is when you take the test and you try to discover this, to not be in a judgment. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult exercise, which is why the questions in the first test, and we had 6,000 people take it, or 7,000 people, I think, I don't remember exactly, to take the first test. And then from that, we eliminated, we replaced, and we tested new questions, because it was important to not be in the judgment. Because sometimes when people are in a, you know, especially on dating apps, you feel judged, or you feel like you can expose yourself. So people are like kind of quite defensive.
There has to be
a right answer or wrong answer. For example, we had a question about what is it that make the best intimacy? And then, you know, and the answers were, in the first version, best sex ever, or you can tell each other everything. And then everyone, like virtually like 92% of the people were answering, you can tell each other everything. He's like, I'm not this douche who's answering, you know, best sex ever. While it's a totally fair answer, right? But in this context of being on a dating app and answering questions, it seems like people would feel there was a right or wrong answer. So we took a lot of time to try to pick the right questions, where it's just about telling who you are, and there's no ranking. There's no right or wrong. There's no better dateable people or less dateable people, right? All tastes are in the nature, and it's more about compatibility.
Because I noticed that, because I remember saying the best sex ever or tell each other everything, but now it's changed to, what was it? A connection, like a sexual connection, wasn't it? And
sensual connection
and secrets, tell each other secrets. And I was like, sensual connection. Whereas on the original one, I remember it was tell each other everything over the best sex ever. So that really, yeah, like you say, with judgment. One of the names that I love, and we've only had two of these, so it might be something to do with the name, but the unicorn. They seem to be very, very rare. There doesn't seem to be many unicorns out there.
It's the unicorns are pretty rare, and actually the rock stars are also really rare. I don't know if that represents your stats. That's going to be so interesting, which is why we love to call this love experiment, because we're gathering. Yeah. We have a little bit more than 350,000 data points, that we gathered in the last week, right? Just because there's so many people taking the test now. And so this is like a gigantic, open air lab, really, of people engaging in this and then we'll be able to improve and continuously improve the algorithm, the emotional matching algorithm, and also possibly create more questions, options, right? Maybe you're going to say after a while, let's say, you just imagine, you say, I dated, a few nights, but, there's the night, right, as a profile. Yeah. But no, it's not for me. Like, I'd rather be with unicorns, something like that. Maybe you're gonna learn doing this. Or one thing that we would love to do as well is really to reveal the access behind, because I feel it's so interesting. Maybe you're gonna have an idea of what kind of profile. It's basically give you access to the correspondence of between those 16 names and what it means behind it. Yeah. With the access, I have no problem with like virtually we're doing kind of
When you were talking it through, I was like, you're giving away all your secrets.
I mean, of course, I feel this is how innovation should be, right?
Yeah.
Like, would it be better to hide your algorithm behind closed doors, and not tell anyone? I think, it's really the space is so... So not advanced, on this dimension that we need open innovation.
Can I also just say that I really love that there's a profile called the unicorn, because unicorn is a slang term in the gay community, which refers to a bisexual woman who sleeps with couples. So really makes me laugh that there's a profile called the unicorn. Because I'm like, yes, a lot of people would like to meet you.
Only you, Liz. Only you.
Sorry.
I'm sure you can build some funny combination, What happens with, the pilot meets the magician,
Or the knight meets the unicorn.
Dating disasters.
This segment of the show is called Dating Disasters, because let's face it, we've all had them. Each week we'll be asking our guests to share their worst dating disaster, and we'll be sharing a dating disaster we've either received or one of our own.
We've come to Liz's favourite part of the show, apart from those segments that we did the other week, but yeah, they'll be on season two. It's dating disasters, and we've had one sent in, and instead of listening to my voice try and read it and go, we've got Liz to read it this week, so you've got a much more like eloquent, sensual tone just to get you through this next
long dating disaster. Can't make any promises about that. You've got the dulcet tones of an Essex girl to read your dating disaster. Lovely. All right, you ready? Everyone.
Ready.
It's quite a long one, so brace yourself, but it's a good one. Okay, so as promised, this is my first ever dating disaster. This is not mine, by the way. This was one that was sent in. I'd just like to be clear about this. I'm just being the audiobook of this dating disaster. Okay. So I think it was one of my first dates. I was about 18 and completely clueless. My dating life is a shambles, and there are plenty more stories, but I think this is the most eventful. So I worked in a leisure centre, and every Saturday night, the most beautiful looking man used to come in and teach football in the youth club. After a few weeks, I happened to mention to a friend that he was the most handsome looking human I had ever seen, and she said she would set us up on a date. Yay! So she gave him my phone number, and we agreed to meet during the week in a pub over the road from the leisure centre. I turned up at the pub, dressed to the nines, felt like $1 million, and went straight over to him and said, "Hiya, do you want a drink?" And he says, "Oh, no, thank you. I'm waiting for somebody." So I was like, yeah, you told me to meet you here.
It gets worse.
I should have just realised there and then that the wires were crossed and he thought I was going to look differently or be somebody else. But no, younger me was an absolute idiot and completely oblivious. So I just went to the bar, got a drink and started chatting. That was mistake number one. After a while, he told me that he didn't feel like drinking and asked if I would prefer to go to the cinema instead of getting another drink. So I thought, yeah, why not? So he jumped in his car and he drove to the most obscure cinema, past several other cinemas, way out the way. We went into the cinema and the only movie left on that evening was Team America, but it wasn't on for another hour. So we said that was okay and we went into the bar next door, which was mistake number two. While we were standing at the bar, stupid, young, naive me sees the icy Carlsberg pump for the first time. You know, the one with all the ice around it. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. And he, obviously joking, told me to lick it and see if my tongue stuck. So I did, and it did. What an idiot. Cue a massive drama and the bar staff having to get warm water to free me. You'd think I would just call the taxi at this stage, but no, clearly I'm a glutton for punishment. So we decided to play a game of pool, which was mistake number three, because now I have plenty of natural talent for certain things, like I'm creative, I'm a good cook, I'm great at dancing. However, I have zero skill when it comes to sport of any kind, and I'm the clumsiest person ever. I trip over my own feet, I get the rules mixed up, genuine incompetence. So the first thing I did was pick up the cue upside down, did this fancy spinny thing to turn it around the right way up and immediately hit him right across the head with it. Oops. So later, I managed to hit the white ball and somehow put the cue underneath it so that it bounced off the table directly into the middle of his forehead and knocked him clean out onto the ground.
It gets worse, though. It gets worse.
So after a massive kerfuffle, we got up off the ground and was looked over by a first aider, and he still wanted to go to the cinema. So I was like, what? He had this massive, huge, obnoxious coggy on his head, and I'd say he was probably in agony and just trying to be brave. So we went to the cinema, Team America. Holy God, not my scene at all. We started watching it and I just gabbed and gabbed and gabbed, mostly because I was not interested in the film. And also because I was terrified that this very handsome human was suffering from severe concussion because the lump on his head was becoming bigger and increasingly purple. Anyway, at one stage I said something to him and he didn't hear me, so I leant in to say it in his ear and only went and bit his ear, didn't I? Actually bit the top of his ear. How embarrassing am I? So clearly it was an accident, but I'd say he'd had enough and he was like, come on, let's go. So cue the walk of shame out of the cinema halfway through this god-awful film. So anyway, we get out of the cinema and I went to turn right to walk towards a car park and he shouted, oh, fuck, and sprinted. I actually mean sprinted off to his left. So I'm just left standing outside the cinema on my own, miles from anywhere, just decided to walk over to his car and stand and wait. Don't really know what else to do. So after about 10 minutes, he came jogging to the car park. Bear in mind, we're in the middle of nowhere. And he told me that he had awful cramp and that he needed to run it off. So I literally said nothing and got into the car, which was a red Ford Focus. After all these years, it's still bright red Ford Focus etched in my mind, because he then asked me if I felt tired and proceeded to roll the passenger seat down so that I was laying flat. He told me to get in, lie down, and he would drive me home. Like, what the fuck? I did as I was told, and I literally did not speak for about 5 minutes when he launched into this verbal diarrhea about how he was actually married and had a little girl, and how they had driven past the cinema and caught him, and that's why he'd had to run, and that's why he wanted me to lie down, because he was afraid that they were following us and would see me. So, needless to say, I've never, ever been more glad to be dropped off home that night, and I never saw him again.
I think that's a bit of, like, pre-karma. So everything that happened to him was the karma of what he was doing. Like, oh, 100%. Seriously?
Like, yeah, and hers for going out with a married man was the tongue on the ice path incident. But, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, but she didn't know he was married. Like, that's the thing. It was him pretending and
When there are, when people take you to obscure places on dates that are right out the way, there's really gotta be some away. gut yeah. feeling that something's
red
off.
Signal something
yeah, red flag red right there. and then the fact that he ran off saying, oh, I've got cramp. He needs to get in the bin. I hope he is in the bin.
Thank you to the listener who sent that in. Loved it.
Yeah, if you was driving past a cinema like so many years ago and managed to see your husband and he ran off, then he cheated.
Bad times.
There we go.
In advance.
Final thoughts.
This segment is called Final Thoughts. Basically, we take a look back at the episode and we each pick something that we'll take away from it or something that we have learned.
We've come to the part of the show where we take a look back at what we've discussed and we look at what we have learned or what we will take away from the show. So, Liz, let's go with you first.
I really love the idea of doing the exact opposite of what the industry does. Like, for me, that's such an interesting concept of something I definitely take away. Like, why, when we've got a problem with something, just do something a little bit different? I really love the innovative thinking of going, okay, what is the opposite of that? And as somebody who really is drawn to simplicity and minimalism and quiet, I just absolutely love what Once is doing in terms of, like, pairing it right back and doing something that is just totally different.
I'm going first next time because you stole my idea. You stole my final thoughts.
Normally I do a final thought and Phil just goes, yeah, what she said.
Yeah, but not this time. So, Clementine, what is your final thought? What have you got that you will take away from this show or you've learned or you found funny or yeah?
My kind of general thought is I'm energized talking to you guys because I feel so first you're kind of a magic list of all my next ideas of what we need to fix in dating, right? I also looked at your stories on Instagram and it was hilarious and I was just virtually taking notes. I was like, oh yeah, we need to fix that. So I love that because this is also how we started the journey on Once virtually. Just I was, tell my horror stories like and that would be for maybe another episode. But like those horror stories is what inspired us to, you know, for example, you know, replace the dick pics by kittens or, you know, invent some mechanism against ghosting or against first horrible aggressive first lines or whatever like so I'm just kind of absorbing everything that you guys say and love it so much, so thanks for the energy.
That's amazing.
mine
my final thought is on Once you'll never ever see a dick pic, you'll only see kittens, and that's love amazing it. I love that. Yeah, and that also so the names of all the categories, it's like everyone wants to be like a knight or a firefighter or a superhero or a unicorn, and it just makes you feel a little bit special inside, being like, yes, I can be one of these. So that's my final thoughts.
Love it. So Clementine, thank you so much for coming on the show. We've really, really enjoyed speaking to you. You're actually super, like, refreshing and amazing to chat to. You've got a little bit of girl crush, not going to lie. But yeah, it's been really good fun and we really appreciate your time. And definitely to anyone who is still dating, go and check out Once. I think you'll really like it.
Thanks.
Clementine, if people want to find out more about you, where should they go? Where do they find you? Where do they find out more about Once?
So they can download Once on the App Store or the Play Store. You can just type Once or Once Dating. Like, you'll probably find us. The logo is a frog because there's a bit of a, once upon a time fairy tale type of background. We'll love to hear from the users. There's an email you can write to us because you've been trying to improve the dating scene a little bit every day. There's a lot of work.
One step at a time, eh?
Exactly. If you want to follow Once on Instagram, it's Once the App. We'll put those in our show notes so everybody can find. And yeah, that's actually, I've just seen the kittens. I've just seen the kittens on your Instagram, and I'm like,
are they cute?
Oh, we will
and
share
really
the kittens.
Cute kittens. Like, we also select really cute kittens. It's important to say.
We will share when this episode comes out.
I feel like there's some sort of feature where the cuteness of the kitten should be proportionate to the niceness of the dick pic. So if it's a really gross dick pic, you get like a really like ugly kitten. And if it's a nice dick pic, you get a nice kitten.
Lizzie, you won't believe me, but on April Fool's this day, this year, that's what we said. We said that the size of the kitten was proportional to the size of the engine. But it was a joke, obviously, because we don't do that. But like, that was really fun as a thought.
I love this app even more. And thank you so much for coming on, because you've made my evening, especially since the football is on and I don't really watch football. So it's giving me something else to do. So thank you very much. And thank you to all the listeners that are listening now. This is our extra episode that we have given you. Next week is our final episode of the season. Ooh, so,
party, party.
Thank you everyone for listening, and we shall see you all next week. Bye.
Thanks a lot.
And I'd like to thank everyone for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, then you can do, whether that's to submit a dating disaster, ask a question, or ask for some advice. We're not that good at helping, but one of our guest experts will certainly be able to. So if you'd like to get in touch, head on over to our socials.
On Facebook and Instagram, it's at Unhinged and Bumbled Up.
On Twitter, it's at Bumbled Up.
Or by email, it's unhinged.and.bumbledup@gmail.com.
If you liked the episode, then please don't forget to like and share and click the follow button above.
We also now have a website, www.uabu.co.uk. See you all next week.